afternoon, and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Stefan Della Guardia, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Jordan Sheldon. It's November 3rd. On today's show, the Climate Change Summit, the stench of the Dominguez Channel, and how students celebrated Dia de los Muertos. All of that and more from Where We Are. Well, anyways, Halloween is over. How was that for you, Stefan?
I won't lie, it was pretty good. I wasn't here for it. I actually spent it in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Yeah. You dress up for anything?
Yeah, I went as Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, cool.
Fitting.
Yeah. I went as Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents. But I actually had a friend that dressed up as climate change activist Greta Thunberg. And speaking of which, as world leaders gather in Glasgow for the United Nations COP26 Climate Summit, questions arise about the significance of the annual meeting and whether it will lead to real change. Mateo Gutierrez has the story.
COP26 is the first time since the Paris Agreement that countries are revisiting their voluntary commitments under the accord. 195 international leaders had committed to holding rising temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius, or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels. A report in August that the UN called a code red for humanity showed that the world was warming faster than scientists previously thought. Real, noteworthy changes are needed. This is what Global Director of the USC Schwarzenegger Institute for State and Global Policy, Conyers Davis, thinks about the summit.
I think that COP is important to check in, you know, every year to sort of see where we are. Are we keeping pace? Are we exceeding our goals? Are we falling short? And you can do that through the COP process. But, you know, you still need to work every day to make sure that you're trying to reduce emissions locally.
Davis also emphasizes the need to not underestimate the importance of the COP26 summit. It is a unique occasion for world leaders to come together in the fight against climate change. USC environmental law professor Robin Craig agrees.
I think it's important for the parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change to get together, to hash through different ideas, to actually talk to representatives and leaders from countries that party nations may not interact with very often, to hear different perspectives, and to try and reach compromise.
While Craig acknowledges the significance of the summit, she is pessimistic about the goals set forth.
I don't think it'll be enough, no. The cutbacks that are needed are fairly extreme at this point. All projections are that emissions are actually going to increase again this year.
COP26 started October 31st and will go until November 12th. The summit's president called it world's, quote, last best hope, unquote, for tackling climate change. Although there's a question for if change will result from COP26, USC Environmental Studies major Annika Goldman believes the summit is one piece to the grander solution.
I think it's definitely steps in the right direction, especially because we've re-entered the Paris Agreement and we are one of the largest contributors to the climate crisis. So that in itself is going to lead to significant change, especially as other leaders hold our country accountable and we can hold other countries accountable.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Mateo Gutierrez.
Around where the I-10 and the I-405 meet, things smell a little different. A stench has been hanging in the air in the community Carson for about a month now. People say it's so bad it's been making them sick, and many have waited too long now for relief. Now we have two reports. First, Sydney Charles talks with those directly affected by the pollution in Carson.
The stench has been an ongoing issue since the beginning of October, when items from Art Naturals, our Gardena-based beauty supply company, leaked into the Dominguez Channel during a warehouse fire. The noxious fumes are created by the combination of products, decaying vegetation, and marine life. Although Los Angeles County Health public officials have voiced that the fumes are not imminently dangerous, Carson residents have reported headaches, dizziness, and other ailments because of the odor. Local college student KG Shiarki is affected every day on his drive to school.
Like, smells like dead animals, dead bodies. Like, it's honestly terrible. Like, whenever I drive to school, I have to, like, cover my nose. And, like, it's just terrible. Sometimes I get dizzy, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've had a couple of times where I'm just like, ooh, I feel lightheaded, like, driving there.
The Los Angeles County Public Works Department has tried to fight the fumes with a biodegradable odor neutralizer called Epilin. In addition to this, county public health officials have advised residents to keep all doors and windows closed, contact air conditioning specialists about upgrading filters, and avoid outdoor activities between 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. But according to Kathy Williams, these efforts are not nearly enough.
I feel like I'm paying a mortgage. I shouldn't have to leave my house to get relief. The county, the state, should be out there working 24/7 to get this resolved. This isn't a 9-to-5 job for them, or it shouldn't be, because it's not a 9-to-5 feel for us that live in it.
A Carson resident for more than 35 years, Williams can vividly remember the first time a whiff of the overpowering odor overtook her.
Me and my daughter was getting ready to go get donuts one early morning. And we opened the front door and a smell of just rotten sewage, rotten eggs, just anything you could think of rotten just immediately rushed us. We wind up not even going to get my donut because I became so nauseous, headache-ish. My stomach started just churning. My ears and nose and eyes were burning. It was an immediate reflex.
Williams is also a breast cancer survivor and is sensitive to smells.
This really knocked me out. It just sort of reminded me of my chemo, which was horrible because the smell was so intense.
The issue does not only affect Carson. The odor is now reported to be spreading throughout neighboring communities, including Gardena, Torrance, Redondo Beach, and more. But for those living and commuting to and from Carson, enough is enough, and they're hoping to find answers soon. For Annenberg Media, I'm Sydney Charles.
Residents of Carson have been clamoring for relief and have grown more and more frustrated. Last Wednesday, a town hall held by LA County sparked a reaction from the community who believe that elected and public health officials have not gone far enough to support them. Claire Fogarty spoke to residents about the town hall and how the community has been impacted.
And the stink still comes in the house, especially at nighttime when you're asleep. It wakes you up from your deep sleep.
That was Josephine Boyan, a 13-year resident of Carson. She is one of the many residents affected by strong odors and hydrogen sulfide gas that have been emanating from the Dominguez Channel since early October. The county has taken some action to stop the odors. County Health Officer Dr. Muntu Davis shared at the town hall last week. But Boyan, along with others, has been frustrated with the amount of help from the county and how long the issue has dragged on.
You know, it took us like 3 weeks of suffering.
Carson-based State Assembly candidate and community organizer Fatima Iqbal Zubair describes how she notices how the community's reaction has been different than similar instances in different places.
I mean, if you even think about what happened with the leak in Huntington Beach, how soon did we figure out who did that? And it was like swift response. In Carson, I think it's been more than 3 weeks now.
Iqbal Zubair points out how when it comes to natural hazards, low-income communities tend to get the short end of the stick.
This has been going on for so long, whether it was hydrogen sulfide, whether it's, you know, other toxic chemicals in there, whether it's unclean water. I mean, South LA, low-income communities, whether it's in Oakland or Richmond or Kern County, you know, have been overlooked. And frankly, like, it is by design.
The town hall included a panel of experts to answer questions. The first and most pressing question was, when should we expect the odors to subside? But instead of offering a timeline, Mark Pastrella, director of LA County Department of Public Works, gave this vague answer instead.
We expect the odors to subside when the hydrogen sulfide that's emanating from the channel is reduced to a level that no longer affects human smell. And we're making great progress and have a great downward trend going currently within the channel.
Community members in the town hall live stream chat sounded off that they were frustrated by the response. Boyan adds that she did not appreciate how they only answered pre-submitted questions.
There's no voices of people. We are the one who's living and affected by this Dominguez Channel order. You know, they don't want to hear it from the crying people. They just want to hear what they want to hear.
In addition to fielding the curated questions, the experts offered the same advice several times throughout the town hall.
But again, if you can just remember 211, they are here to provide you with support.
The intention of the number is to help connect residents with reimbursements for money they spend on protecting themselves. But Boyan, who spent $800 on the advised protective equipment to outfit her home, called the number to no avail.
And even the 211, they don't have an answer for us. I called second week of this incident. Almost every day I call, I don't see any, reimbursement. I don't even see a cent that's coming from them.
While residents wait on their reimbursements, they are also waiting for answers. Iqbal Zubair shares.
See, I hope that they really do a thorough, independent investigation and like just are really transparent with the community about like how this happened and, you know, why it won't happen again.
As the odor in the Dominguez Channel continues to reek, the Carson residents are faced with how to persevere with or without help from the government.
Kind of crowdfunding, you know, for the filters, which is really sad, right? Because they're like trying to just pay for clean air.
Carson residents continue to live in the stench. And for Boyan, her biggest worry is her children.
My kids are like complaining that they don't have a normal life. They don't have fresh air to breathe in.
And though she is angry and frustrated, Boyan still looks forward.
I just want to take care of my future and my kids and their future.
And for now, what that future is pretty uncertain. For Annenberg Media, I'm Claire Fogarty.
A USC nonprofit organization strives to combat and increase both harm and drug awareness. Here's Kyla Drew with the story.
The Trojan Awareness Combating Overdose Organization, also known as TACO Inc., is a harm reduction educational organization grounded by science. TACO Inc. provides students with subsidized and rapid access to fentanyl test strips. With fentanyl overdose-related deaths increasing 30% within 1 year, fentanyl is becoming a growing topic across the country. For Madeline Hilliard, the executive director of TACO Inc., it's time to take action.
We started with 5 people. We now have 26 volunteers on the team. As a team, we've built this up to where there's a problem and it's related to drug use and harm reduction, and we're able to immediately deploy a solution.
In light of the recent drugging and sexual assault allegations against members of the Sigma Nu fraternity, Hilliard highlights the importance of fast distribution to protect college students.
When this happened last week, and you know the number of reports coming out from so many girls, I made the executive decision, this is happening now, we will figure out the paperwork later. This is something that needs to happen.
As a growing nonprofit, TACO Inc. doesn't have the funds to distribute endless test strips to everyone. At this time, test strips are provided solely based on level of toxicity.
With these drug tests, we're really trying to tackle issues like in order of, you know, what is the most damaging that we can provide a solution to and kind of go down the list from there.
TACO Inc. has been increasing their fundraising efforts to increase distribution of fentanyl test strips, but also for benzodiazepines, aka benzo, which tests for a broader range of drugs.
We've been, you know, actively ramping up our fundraising efforts to be able to cover these benzo test strips too, because we want to make those as financially accessible to the student bodies as possible.
Hilliard hopes that students experimenting with drugs will consider reaching out to TACO Inc. to practice safe drug use.
If they use the test strip and it comes back positive, as far as reporting, that's obviously up to them. But if it does come back positive, hopefully they will report it. And then we can start to remove some of this predatory behavior from the USC community.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Kyla Drew.
I'm Stefan Della Guardia. We're glad you're with us for From Where We Are.
And I'm Jordan Sheldon. It is 14 minutes and 56 seconds past the hour. Coming up, TV diversity remains lacking in off-camera roles. And is it too early to listen to Christmas music? Stay with us.
~15% of show creators in digital scripted TV are people of color. But the Hollywood Diversity 2021 report done by UCLA looks at the work needed in the entertainment industry. Here we have Sydney Charles with another story.
Diversity has been a topic of conversation in the entertainment industry for decades. Last week, UCLA released its 8th annual Hollywood Diversity Report, which showed an increase in on-camera jobs for people of color. However, TV writers, directors, and other off-camera staff remain largely white and male. As America's minority population steadily increases, co-author of the study, Darnell Hunt, says it is essential that the entertainment industry reflects this change to avoid stereotyping.
The people who pitch the ideas for those shows have not been very diverse. Even when we are telling stories that include people of color or revolve around things that they've been involved in their lives, often the authenticity is not quite there because the people who came up with the idea haven't had firsthand experience with those communities, with those peoples.
And this isn't just limited to TV. According to Matt Oflaz, co-president of the USC Asian Pacific Cinema Association, the 2020 live-action Mulan film also sparked controversy.
I think that right there is a prime example of this story that on the surface is like, oh, wow, this is very diverse. We all Asian cast. And then you look a little deeper into it, and a lot of the major creatives behind it were white.
Award-winning journalist and associate professor at USC Annenberg, Mickey Turner, agrees that the trend of sticking white creators behind the scenes adds another barrier of unrelatability for viewers of color.
In terms of the diversity, we still have a way to go in terms of showing people of color in their full tapestry. Some of the content still seems a little stereotypical to me. And, you know, I've been watching TV since the 60s. So seeing what the landscape could be, and I've seen what the landscape often is when it comes to portraying racial minorities.
One of her favorite shows that she feels is pushing back against this trend is Insecure, an HBO series created by LA native Issa Rae.
A lot of people that are going to miss a show like Insecure that really highlighted a community or communities in Los Angeles. And, you know, one of the reasons why I was so connected to that show was because a lot of the places where they shot on location are places I go.
The work that Hunt and his colleagues have done confirms these very sentiments. This year's report proves that shows created by and featuring minorities are important to today's audience.
One of the things that we found in our report over the years is that audiences tend to gravitate toward shows where not only the on-screen presence is diverse, but also when the writer's room is diverse.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Sydney Charles.
Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva has actively spoken out against the mandate requiring that all deputies be vaccinated against COVID-19. During Tuesday morning's press conference, the sheriff stated that thousands have threatened to retire and more than 655 people have already put in motion plans to leave the department or have already left. Villanueva's concern is that understaffed bureaus have the potential to increase crime rates across the country and the potential to lose longtime staff with deep institutional knowledge.
First of all, the Board of Supervisors, you may not be aware of this, they don't run the sheriff's department. They're not in a position to put regulations on sheriff's employees or the district attorney for that matter or the assessor's office.
Mexican holiday Dia de los Muertos ended on November 1st with celebrations across Latin America and the U.S. Here's Ayana Martinez with the story of how the holiday has evolved and spread in mainstream media.
Dia de los Muertos concluded its celebrations this past Tuesday, but its impact lasts well beyond its traditional 3 days. With growing prominence in mainstream media, the Mexican holiday has crossed cultural barriers here in the U.S. But how has the holiday evolved in recent years, and what does it mean to younger generations of Mexican Americans today? USC alumna and Afro-Mexicana Dr. Natalie Hart remembers celebrating Dia de los Muertos with her grandparents and mother. She says that the holiday serves as an important bridge between generations past, present, and future.
As long as your ancestors' names are spoken, they are never forgotten. That will be passed down to my future children and their future children. You never forget where you come from, and you never forget who opened the door and laid the foundation for you to be where you are today. I think being introduced to the history hopefully will, you know, spark that innovation light in folks' mind and the curiosity to want to learn more.
One way that people are being introduced to Dia de los Muertos is through mainstream media. For Cal State Fullerton graduate Danny Pass, the 2017 Disney Pixar film Coco does a great job in teaching about the holiday beyond the decoration.
Because it's so colorful and it looks so festive, but at the same time, there's a lot of meaning behind it that a lot of people don't know about. And I think that with movies like Coco, I think they did a really great job of actually describing and narrating what is the meaning behind Dia de Muertos. And I think it's nice that other people that maybe may not have been interested in learning about it are learning about it.
Coco is not the only film that has left an impact. Dr. David Sarasua, a professor of Spanish at USC, recalls seeing how the celebrations of Dia de los Muertos have changed in Mexico following the 2015 James Bond film Spectre.
The main character goes to Mexico City, and in the middle of a Dia de los Muertos parade, he has to chase some of the bad guys. No? I have never recalled in Mexico seeing a parade like that, and I started doing a little bit of research on that, and the whole parade in the movie was made up. What's interesting to me is the impact that movie had, because a couple of years after the movie was released, the city of Mexico City, started to have a parade similar to what was shown in the movie.
For Abelardo de la Peña Jr., the director of marketing and communications at La Plaza de Cultura y Artes in Los Angeles, the growing popularity of Dia de los Muertos in mainstream media has been subjected to appropriation in recent years. But he's hopeful that its prominence would open doors for communication and eventually connection.
There are some organizations that might just take advantage of the fact that they could connect with the celebration to push products. But at the same time, if it just causes a person who might not be familiar with Dia de los Muertos but actually look into the culture, they might get something from it and start respecting it more and maybe change their attitude about the Mexican culture and even about their own mortality and the fact that as Mexicanos, we don't see death as a finality, but we just see it as another passageway.
While Dia de los Muertos may be over for the year, the value of culture and the power of tradition are two things that will remain prominent year-round. For Annenberg Media, I'm Ayana Martinez.
Each year, it appears that the holiday season comes quicker and quicker. Stores begin to put out Christmas decorations shockingly early, even 2 or 3 months in advance. A lot of people jump right from Halloween into Christmas, completely skipping over Thanksgiving. But is it too early to start listening to Christmas music? Reporter Lupe Llerenas finds out.
Surprisingly, between the days of October and November, radio stations change from pumpkins to Mariah Carey. To some, November 1st is now the official start of Christmas and holiday season. So as holiday season approaches, one question is at the forefront of many people's minds. When can we start listening to Christmas music? I spoke with several folks about this and even got their reactions listening to holiday music. for USC senior Sarah Kim, it's never too early.
Oh, I'm one of those.
You're one of those.
I'm one of those, I must say. I love Christmas music. I think Christmas music, especially that song, and then Nat King Cole's Christmas song, they serotonin levels boosted. Like for me, like even in the middle of the year when I'm super stressed, sometimes I'll just turn these songs on and I'll just instantly feel better.
But not Liam Ram. The USC sophomore says holiday music can and should be put on hold until the end of November.
It's a little too early for me. Yeah, I definitely have to wait until like Thanksgiving, like Black Friday. I think it makes sense. But I know that it like makes a lot of money to start doing it early. So, but Starbucks is already going and I'm not ready for that either. I didn't even get a pumpkin spice latte yet.
However, Ashley Diggins, National Promotions Director at Capitol Music Group, disagrees and says Christmas music puts people in a happy place.
I do not think it's too early to listen to holiday music. I think that November 1st is perfectly fine to start listening to holiday music. And it's because it brings people joy. And especially after the last 2 years that we had, I think it's perfectly acceptable. Like, the holidays are a fun time for a lot of people.
While there are many opinions on this topic, one thing we can all agree on is that Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas is a holiday staple. Diggins says the singer is a marketing genius. In fact, the pop star's social media holiday video has been viewed more than 7.7 million times.
If there was a song that I made that put more money in my pocket, you bet your butt I would market it to the nth degree. She has kids to think about. She has an estate to worry about. Make all your money, boo. And it's a staple. And people have like named Mariah Carey as the Christmas queen.
So whether you're gearing up for the holiday season or not, it's safe to say Christmas music has a jolly effect. For Annenberg Media, I'm Lupe Arenas.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Sorry, I just had to. I mean, I couldn't resist, Stefan. I don't. It's too catchy.
I love it. That's beautiful, too.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's all we have time for on today's From Where We Are. Celine Mangiola, Erohi Sheth, Spencer Klein, and Guilherme Guerrero produced today's show. We also got help from Gabrielle Horton.
Paulina Cherizova is our technical operator, and Derek Renfro composed our theme music. We are also streaming live on KXSC. Follow KXSC at kxsc.org/listen and on YouTube at Annenberg Radio News.
Subscribe to From Where We Are on Apple Podcasts. And if you're looking for more news, be sure to download Annie, Annenberg's news app. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Annenberg Media. I'm Stefan Della Guardia.
And I'm Jordan Sheldon. And from all of us in Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again for
From Where We Are.
Thank you.